Is everybody in? Is everybody in? The show is about to begin.
Welcome to the podcast, Conscience That Made Us. Interviews and stories, tales from the bus. We love taking you back to when it all went down. The greatest live shows and that cheering crowd sound. It's Concerts, Concerts That Made Us, ConcertsThatMadeUs.com.
Hey, this is Sito from Wonderboom, or as you would say, Wonderboom. And you're listening to Concerts That Made Us.
Close your eyes and open up now. Hear it again, the song of my love.
Sito, you're very welcome to Concerts That Made Us.
Thank you very much.
So, big news, you guys have a new album, Hard Mode, dropping on March 22nd. What can we expect from it?
I suppose it depends on the beholder. You know, those who know who we are as a band, like our fans and all that, I think some singles have been released so far, so people are going to have some of our fans are going to have a pretty vague idea as to what to expect. But then there's, in true Wonderboom style, it's going to be another eclectic album where not one song is the same as the other. So there will be some surprises in store. and us just being a little bit more creative and pushing the envelope a little bit more for ourselves creatively. But yeah, it's hard to preempt what people can expect with regards to Hard Mode, and especially if you don't know who we are, and I assume a lot of your audience don't know who we are. We're a South African band that's been going for like 28 years. We're celebrating our 28th year this year, and rock is our sort of core sound, but because of the people that we are in the band, our styles, subgenres, we've dabbled in different kind of subgenres, from punk to funk to hip hop and South African urban sort of dance style called Kwaito. But yeah, with this album, it's going to be eclectic. We have a sort of self-deprecating in-joke about being schizophrenic with our style. So, right. Yeah, we'll see.
Right, right. I've actually had Martin on in the past when he was doing I'm With The Singer. So a good few of my listeners will be familiar with Wanderboom. But
okay.
As you mentioned, you've dropped some singles already. You released Deadly yesterday and a couple of weeks back, Misdemeanor. Now, Misdemeanor is one hell of a banger. I have to ask, where did the inspiration come from? It was you just wanted to write a song that was a floor filler, or was there more to it?
Yeah, I think Martin and I are the sort of songwriters in the band. And over the past sort of 5 to 10 years, we've been really digging deep as to what we personally would dig to hear on a dance floor. I always also have like my wife in mind, because we kind of hit it off in an alternative club that we used to go to a lot, and I always think about her. What would she dance to, you know, with a strobe light going in a dingy dark sort of club dance floor. And Misdemeanor just screams those influences for me, you know. It's a cool riff that Martin developed, and when we workshopped the song together and did all our pre-production, we were just like, let's just go there, you know. So between the femme fatale kind of concept in the lyrics to the sort of kraut surf style verses and explosive choruses, it has been a real banger when we play it live as well. And I think the first couple of times that we played it without anybody hearing it for the first time, we just got a great immediate response to it. So it's been quite positive.
Right, right. And you know, the album, it follows on from your 2017 album, Rising Sun. I have to ask, why do you make us wait so long for new music?
It's a good question. It's a good question. I think the flow of how our lives work, we've been going for 28 years and we haven't stopped. We've just been between gigging and recording. We're always kind of recording, but I think when we did our last couple of single recordings, we also just recently, well, not recently, but about 2004 now. So 5 years ago, we signed up with the label called Just Music. And the in-house producer is a guy that I've been wanting to work with for a while. His name is Matthew Fink. He's done some really great work, great musician himself, coming from great bands here in South Africa. And we're very like-minded. Between him, Martin, and myself, we've been creating some really cool, well, for me anyway, some really cool music. And so this album is basically a culmination of singles that we've been releasing over the past few years, well, since COVID, really, and a whole bunch of new songs. So it's kind of like we work in chapters. There's no sort of preset timelines. We just did feel that we needed to release an actual album now. And yeah, and it's exciting. I'm sorry to keep you waiting. But it's just the way, it's just the way we've been flowing, and hopefully our next album won't take too long again.
Fingers crossed, fingers crossed. Something I'm always intrigued by is, you know, the album is out in roughly 2 weeks' time. What does this time period look like for the band? Is there anything you guys need to do, or is it just kind of some downtime?
Yeah, so we just came back from tour, or just came back, I suppose, January. We finished touring at the second week of January. And we've decided to hold off on gigs until we release the album so that we can focus all of our energy and take care of all the other stuff, like interviews with great podcasters like yourself and doing, you know, publicity and putting together videos. So, yeah, we released Deadly, the single, officially today on Friday, the 8th. And we've got a new music video. So we've been shooting music video content and just getting all our ducks in a row. A couple of us have got other side projects. So our side projects have been keeping us busy as well within the gap of, you know, January and now the end of March, where we kick off a nationwide tour around South Africa. So, yeah, that's where we're at sort of psychologically and strategically. It's just holding back, and we'd like to give, you know, we'd like to give the new sort of set some love, obviously, with a lot of the new material, a lot of the new songs. So that's exciting, and yeah, that's where we're at the moment.
Right, I see. Now, a bit of an interesting one for you. Your diehard fans, what do you think they're going to absolutely love about this album?
I think they're going to love the variety. I mean, it's typical, again, as I said, it's a typical Warner Boom eclectic album, but the styles in which we delve in are quite fresh for us. They might not be groundbreaking for, you know, for sort of the progressive indie market or whatever. But yeah, I think for us, it's going to, for the fans, I think they're going to enjoy the freshness of it and the sincerity of some of the songs, the cheekiness or the nerve of some of the other songs. I think there's going to be no dull moments from beginning to end for our fans.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, you know, you've been a band for 28 years. Does it get easier? I mean, can you guys walk into the studio almost on autopilot now and just bang it out?
No.
Right.
I think that, look, I think when you look at how long we've been going, how old we are individually, it's, I don't know. I think it's, there's lots of preparation before we go into the studio to record anyway. I mean, if we want to get technical about it or if we want to be honest about it. So there's different sort of stages that we go through with regards to getting the song out. And we've learned that doing, you know, from the songwriting to workshopping the songs themselves and then doing pre-production, what we call pre-production work in our individual studios, and getting the songs to a point where we think we're ready to present to the band, and then we workshop it with the band, and then we try them out live, just to get that sort of, because we're essentially a live band, so when we try it out live, we get a, you know, bit of feedback from that as well. So by the time we get into the studio, we've done a lot of the work, but then once we've recorded, then it's like another 50% of the work gets done with the songs themselves. And then we have more fun. We get experimental. We play around with the different source recordings, from digital to organic acoustic instruments. This album even features, dare I say, a whistling motif from yours truly, which I've always kind of teased with, but anyway, we actually went ahead and did it. So there's lots of fun. I enjoy every single process. Martin does as well. And I think the when you it maybe to the sort of uneducated or common listener, you won't really pick up those details, but I think it's those details that make the songs sort of stand out a bit and special and give some kind of depth to them. So when we go into the studio, we kind of know what we're doing, but a lot of work is done before that.
I getcha. Now, you mentioned that you're going on a nationwide tour. I know it's a bit of a silly question, but us fans over at this side of the world, is there any chance of us seeing it live? Is there any plans down the pipeline of maybe touring other nations?
You know, it's been a dream of us to go to Ireland. For me personally, especially, I have so many of my favorite bands that come from your neck of the woods. And, you know, we've only gone as far as, you know, England and Wales, on that side of the world a couple of times. Being at the southern tip of Africa, as much as it is, blissfully great being isolated from the rest of the chaos of the world, it's still a dream of ours to hit that side and tour and get to meet everybody on that side, because I know the Irish love their music, love their live music, and I know that we probably have a good shot at you know, making you guys I don't know, I suppose listen to us or appreciate where we're coming from and our love for music. There's nothing set in stone. We are hoping that, you know, we'll get some interest with regards to the singles that we're releasing, because I think that's the thing. Like, it's one thing to go over when you're, you know, in your 20s and you've got no sort of, you know, obligations or ties back at home, and just going and just taking a chance. And I would love to do that, you know, just go and take a chance for a few months and just and build up an audience from scratch. But I think it'll help having some kind of love or interest from songs to videos or anything like that. I suppose playlists also help on the different streaming platforms. So it's definitely a desire of ours. And if there's any festivals or if there's any kind of opportunities, we're there, you know. We've gone to China, we've gone to different African countries, neighboring countries, and of course, as I mentioned, the UK. But, you know, if you book us, we will come, as the great Wayne from Wayne's World once said.
I like it. And, you know, something I'm intrigued by as well is, you guys, you're legends in the scene. You know, your legacy is well and truly set in stone. From your point of view now, who do you view as your competition these days, or is there any competition?
You know, I think when it comes to fighting for the sort of the small slither of the rock market, it's really not, there is really no real competition in that. We more sort of stand together here in South Africa. I know that rock has been out of fashion for a while. So I would say the real competition would be DJs, you know, and hip hop. But as you know, the normal, I suppose the typical cycle of rock, where it has to eat itself, it has to die before it becomes necessary to resurface. I think we're going to be, you know, when you catch that wave of the rock resurgence, then it's pretty cool. But at the moment, we seem to be coming out of a daze. So our real competition has been, you know, just the attention of everybody going towards DJs and, I suppose, hip hop and EDM and that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. It's similar over here. It's rock isn't really at the forefront. It's more pop and, you know, indie stuff like that. But I feel like as well, even back in the 80s, it was like rock was almost a subculture, you know, and it was cool to like it, but it wasn't what everybody liked.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, as soon as it becomes like fashionable, where they're using, you know, rock music for ads and syncs, and you know, it's just like a fashion thing, then you know that it eventually becomes saturated, and then it, you know, people grow off it, they get bored of it, and rock has to keep things interesting for people, you know. Like I'm quite critical of doing the same thing over and over again. I think we're not doing ourselves any favors when we just keep playing the blues or keep rehashing or regurgitating stuff that people have heard before. You know, I personally get bored, and I love to listen to all kinds of different music. So reinvention, repackaging, you know, keeping things interesting. And I suppose the big bonus that we have as rock artists is our live performances. So it's about that connection. It's about the magic that you create. It's about the energy that comes from playing your instrument well and, you know, and in sync with the rest of the band.
Yeah, nice segue as well, because I'm going to have to start asking you some concert-related questions. It is Concerts That Made Us, after all. So,
cool.
First up, an easy one. As a concert goer, what concerts do you think have made you?
Oh, my goodness. As much as I'm a long-lived musician, I'm a huge fan of lots of bands. And I would say... So are you basically asking me, like, what are the best concerts I've gone to?
Yes,
my favorite ones?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. So, South Africa is quite deprived of, it's not as well-visited as the Northern Hemisphere with regards to, you know, all the big bands. One of my bucket list bands I want to see live is Radiohead. I'm a huge Radiohead fan. But I've had the privilege of seeing U2 a couple of times out here in South Africa. They were a huge influence on me, so definitely in my top five. My top two live concerts have to be Depeche Mode during the devotional tour.
Nice.
That was really, really beautiful. It really blew me away. And Massive Attack when they did their mezzanine tour. Completely bowled over by that, you know. But then The Cure, fantastic. I was just in tears for like most of the sets. They were out here, I think, in 2019 or something like that. And then I really enjoyed the Pixies. So those are my top five. Prodigy, of course. Prodigy would. I'm also a sort of closet electronica fan. So, and Prodigy were just a wonderful, are just a wonderful combination of, you know, when you see them live, with Liam Howlett behind the decks and samplers and everything else, but then he's got the band going, and of course Maxim and the late great Keith. What a great live experience, just like nonstop. Hopping from beginning to end, it's like the most fulfilling cathartic experience for me. So between Depeche Mode, Massive Attack, and Prodigy, those are my top three.
I like it. And for any listeners that haven't caught one of your shows now, what can they expect? Lay it all out first.
All right. Well, although it might not seem like it, we are completely unrehearsed choreography wise, but musically, because we've been playing for so long, we are regarded as one organism. So it's quite fluid. Every sort of every show that we do is different to the last one that we do, just for numerous reasons, you know, just living in the moment. And the crowd makes a huge difference to that. So depending on where we're playing and who we're playing to and what kind of set list we put together, it can be different every time. but there's always lots of energy, lots of connection, lots of vulnerability, and just some magic happens when we perform live. And I know that just from the feedback that I get from the crowd, you know, it's almost like we are living what our crowd would love to be doing on stage for them, you know? So, yeah. And it's an honor and a privilege to do. And especially at this stage of our careers, in the stage of my life, to be getting on stage and shaking my tush I still get quite a kick out of it. I'm not bored yet.
Good to hear. How do your shows nowadays then hold up to, say, 15, 20 years ago, energy-wise, sound-wise?
Yeah, about 20 years ago, I felt like maybe, just looking back, there was a lot more focus on the show and the energy that we give to the detriment of our actual playing, our performance of our instruments. And now it's like second nature to us, our performance. So we're a lot tighter. A lot of people say, you sound like the CD, which could be a bad thing if you kind of flat or whatever, because it could be quite sort of sterile or whatever, but the live thing is still there. You know, the energy is still there. So, compared to 15, 20 years ago, we play a lot better. We're a lot more consistent. My voice holds out a lot better. I'm a little bit more disciplined now. I'm not as abusive as I was in my 20s, where I would not warm up. And, you know, so there's little things like that, you know, where people appreciate the effort. But when you listen back to the recordings, you're like, ooh. And now it's not so much like that. Now at least it sounds good and it looks good. So yeah, I feel like I'm bragging, but yeah, I suppose those are the answers that you want from me. So.
Right. Sounds like a hell of a show now, to be honest. And
yeah.
I love asking this now. Out of all the gigs you've played over your entire career, is there one that sticks out as the highlight for you?
Oh man, it's difficult to say, and I'm sure that a lot of your guests say that as well. Because sometimes the sort of smaller, intimate gigs, you know, there's like so much unexpected magic that happens in such shows. Like especially the stripped down kind of unplugged shows, because you're kind of vulnerable and people are listening to every fine detail. But I think as a sort of bigger picture and for maybe for your audience to kind of have some kind of context as to the kind of shows that we've done, a few years ago, we opened for Guns N' Roses when they came out to South Africa. And that was quite an experience, because it was the biggest crowd we've ever played to in one of our sort of iconic stadiums in Soweto. It's called Soccer City or FNB Stadium. And our sets that we had like 20 minutes that was our set. And Guns N' Roses only came out like an hour later, and we were the only support band. So when we started playing, there was a few thousand people in front of us, which is even just hearing that sounds absurd, like, oh, just a few thousand. But by the end of our set, we had 60,000 people. And that was quite surreal. So like, you know, it might be predictable to sort of name drop and say, oh yeah, the biggest audience, and that was the best highlight. Maybe for many reasons it was a highlight, and we're still getting great feedback about that. And yeah, I think that those that came to the concert will agree that it was quite special. It was pretty awesome.
Yeah. I have to ask, maybe Guns N' Roses aren't the best example of a band to ask this question of now, but what do you learn when you're playing with a band on that level?
Yeah, songs. songs are everything. Obviously, you know, when they performed, they did like a 3-hour show and they basically played everything in their catalog. And it's not like they have a huge catalog, you know, it's not that extensive. But, you know, something that I learned from them, because, you know, the production side of things is one thing, and it's easy to be impressed by, you know, all the smoke and mirrors and stuff. But like, there's so much power in a good song. And that's what your fans want, you know. That's what they come out, that's what they'll buy tickets for, is to experience those songs that have played such a role in their personal lives. So yeah, that would be my one big take from a band like that, is the songs are everything.
Yeah, makes sense. And to flip that question around then, if you think of all the gigs you've played in your career, is there one that was maybe the worst, and how did you overcome it?
The very beginning of our career, maybe a couple of years in, we played at a festival in a town called Secunda, which is this, it's like this gas mining town. Not the greatest place. The air is like quite thick. But anyway, the people there, you know, obviously great. You know, they love their music. They're a bit deprived there. And it was the middle of winter. We arrived for this festival, which was a once-off festival. And by the time we hit the stage, it was so cold that everybody left. So the promoter, like Martin, is such a great sort of he was good in getting the money out of the promoter, because it looked like the festival was a bit of a failure and we had driven out all that way and we could have, like, you know, he would have not paid us. But Martin made sure. He's like, show me the money. And the guy opened the zipper of his MacGyver jacket and showed him like this roll of notes. He's like, here's the money. He's like, no, put it in my hand. So the guy put the money in Martin's hands, and the guy says, listen, I know there's nobody out there, but I want you to play like there's 10,000 people. So so we went up there, we plugged in, and not even the sound engineer was at the front of house. We literally played to nobody. Right. Everybody had gone to their tents, everybody had gone away, and we played a most passionate set, like there was 10,000 people in front of us. But there was nobody there. But yeah, I suppose that's, you know, there's some kind of romantic glory in that.
Yeah. Maybe the most rewarding rehearsal you ever did.
Yeah, no, that's exactly how we saw it, you know.
And when it comes to showtime then, your pre-show and post-show ritual, how do you psych yourself up? And then afterwards, how do you wind down?
Well, it's definitely changed over the years. There used to be lots of drugs and alcohol involved in the past.
Right.
And nowadays, I do vocal warm-ups, on my way to the gig. I behave myself so that I'm in top form. We try not to integrate too much with the crowd until we perform, so that we're focused and we can give our best show. I kind of feel that if you're hanging around and you're just like, you know, drinking and that kind of a thing, you lose focus and it does affect your performance. But then thereafter, I mean, and that's me personally. The other guys in the band, they have different sort of rituals. Some guys step out for a smoke, and other guys like to take a drink. But for me as a vocalist, I'd like to just look after myself, make sure I warm up, which I learned from doing a bit of theater a few years ago. And after the show, just like get to meet everybody, chill out, wind down. It takes me a while for the adrenaline and the energy to sort of dissipate. So I'm not one of those guys that can get off stage and get into bed takes me a while to wind down.
Yeah.
It depends on the situation, but that's me. Just chill out, get to meet everyone, do a few selfies. If there's a nice long drive, then listen to some cool tunes and defrag that way. But that's my ritual, as boring as it sounds.
I like it. Before we dive into the last couple of questions then, future plans, I know the album is out on the 22nd. Is there anything else you want to let us in on?
I think we're going with the flow on this album. I'm feeling like the approach to this album's marketing and promotion and all that has been a little bit casual, in that we haven't been forcing or it feels less contrived. We're just kind of going with the flow and just trusting that the songs speak for themselves and help help the whole process. So I think, starting with the songs, I'm just trusting the process and hoping that people just enjoy it. And if we get enough interest, we will come to Europe and we'll come to Ireland. I have lots of friends who live out there, so it would be great for us to get there. If people like our music, please share and follow us on Facebook, or like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter and that kind of a thing, and connect with us. We'd love to get out beyond the borders of deepest, darkest Africa and share the love. So at the moment, that's just what we're doing. We're going to be releasing a couple more singles with videos, so we can look out for that. The Deadly video is going to be out, hopefully. The director's busy working on it now. So it might be out this weekend even, but look out for it, and just connect with us and we'll connect with you.
Brilliant. We, no matter what it takes, we have to get you to even get back to the UK or, mainland Europe, if not Ireland.
Ah, that'd be awesome. It'll be a dream come true.
Yeah, definitely. Right, we'll dive into the last couple. These are a few random, odd questions, but I'm intrigued to see your answers. First off, is there a fan encounter that sticks with you today?
There's been good ones and bad ones, I suppose. We had a great video shoot this past weekend, and one of our fans who is quite shy and I suppose physically not what you would call an influencer or anything like that. We did a sort of call to action for any of our fans who wanted to be extras on our video to come and join us. And she joined us, and she came to me during the shoot and she said, I'm having so much fun. I've always wanted to be an extra on something, like an ad or a movie or a music video or something. And this is the first time I've actually done it. And I want to thank you for being part of, for making me part of your video. And I found that to be quite special. I think the moments like that make me feel like it's worth it. Like what we're doing is really cool. Getting people to come out of their shells to experience what we're experiencing. So that was quite sweet. On the negative side, I've had a stalker that made her way, moved into a commune without my friends knowing that she was obsessed. And she ended up getting a tattoo and just following me everywhere, from the places I worked to club gigs and stuff like that. And it got so out of hand that I had to get a restraining order.
Oh my gosh.
So there's that. But then there's all the love in between. So that's that.
Right.
Oh my fan. God. Those are my fan experiences.
Right.
Lovely. Nobody got hurt and we're all good.
Well, that's the main thing.
Yeah.
The next one. What are you currently obsessed with? It can be anything at all.
Okay. I am a real coffee fanatic. And I even started my own coffee company with my roaster friend. We've teamed up. And I've made it my life mission, especially for the winter of my years, to learn as much about coffee and to know what other people love about coffee and just to get the most out of the coffee experience. That's what I'm really obsessed with at the moment.
Interesting. Definitely something thinking outside the box.
Yep. Non-musical, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And back to music. If you had to spend 24 hours locked inside a room with any musician from history, who would it be?
Oh, man. That's a fascinating question because, there's just so many. I would love to hang out with Tom York and with Nick Cave, but I would have to see what I feel like on the day, you know, which side of my bed I would wake up to. I'm really obsessed with both of them. So, yeah. Can I choose? Do I have to choose one?
No, you can have the two of them.
So, leave it at that. Cool.
Yeah, interesting choice. I feel like with the two of them, it could either be a really good time or a really bad time, depending on what moods they were in.
I've had two dreams, imposter syndrome dreams about Nick Cave, where I'm suddenly playing in his band as he toured South Africa, and I'd organized his tour, and it was like a university tour or something random like that, and I managed to talk him into letting me play in the Bad Seeds, and I was just fucking up everything, and at the end of the show, and we all did like a bit of a curtain call. And he looked at me and I'm all dressed in like a suit and everything. He's like, he looks at me and he goes, "Well, at least you're dressed well." And that's how my dream ended.
Right.
So I know what you mean about it ending badly or going badly.
You need to like dive into that dream and see what the meaning behind it is.
I know. I might get scared. I'll speak to my psychologist about it.
And the final one. So what is your go-to album?
Oh, man. Portishead Dummy.
Right. Okay.
There's so many albums that don't grow old for me. In Rainbows, Songs of Faith and Devotion, some electronica that stood the test of time because, you know, dance music can date easily. But just like off the top of my head, I just keep revisiting that album. I'm a big trip hop fan. That and Massive Attack's Mezzanine, you know?
Yeah. Perfect. Great choices.
Really, really cool. Thank you. I'm glad you approved.
Listen, Cecil, it's been an absolute blast. Now I've really enjoyed chatting with you.
Oh man, likewise. It was really felt really natural and cool, and I hope I get to meet you in person sometime.
So. as I spin out alone on this broken sphere. My heart's in one place, head's being pulled. I was born in the mouth of a wolf. You can hold me, hold me.
Hey guys, I really hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please rate and review us on iTunes and Spotify. And if you're interested in signing up to Bandbuilder Academy, use the link in the show notes below and enter the code CONCERTS and you'll receive 10% off. So, until next time, keep rocking!
Hey! Hey, what are you guys still doing here? The show is over. It's over. You can go home. Go on. We'll see you next time. We'll be here. Bye.